Welcome to the Amiga Ireland podcast. Today we've got Stephen Leary with us of the Terrible Fire Accelerators. Open source and Amiga aren't the most famous of friends traditionally, but now you can actually order open source hardware for Amiga as well as Atari. Terrible Fire is the name of the project that provides these accelerators that you can build yourself, and they can be modified by the community since they're open source. The creator is Stephen Leary, based in Scotland, and he's with us today. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
And pleasure to be here.
It's great to finally chat with you after following some of your assembly videos. You've delivered a lot of products at the moment so far. Would you want to start by telling us how your project began?
I don't know. I had a bit of an itch I needed to scratch technically. I'd always wanted to build an O2O accelerator for an Amiga 500. And I'd kind of been sitting looking at various designs for a number of years. And I think in the end, I just sat and drew a diagram and looked at some other people who'd done similar things. And what I kept realizing was that people had kept repeating the wheel, kept reinventing it, kept having to start from scratch. And that kind of frustrated me. So I thought I'd make this open source and I'd start off by doing this O2O accelerator. And then it kind of snowballed from there and more products appeared.
I see. So we'll back it up a little bit. And could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what your story is?
So I guess I'm a country bumpkin. I come from the Outer Hebrides. I come from the Isle of Lewis. I grew up in a very Celtic community, very Gaelic speaking community, and I kind of like the only way to get out of that community and do anything with your life was to go to university. So I came here to Glasgow probably about 20 plus years ago to do an electronics degree, thinking that would be a short hop and I'd be moving on to bigger things like California and things, but I kind of got stuck here in Glasgow after doing my electronics degree and basically ended up working in software engineering for the last 15 years. But I really have an itch for doing some electronic engineering, because just as I sort of graduated into the field of electronics, everything kind of moved to China. So I ended up having to reinvent my career pretty much at the beginning. So, but I still loved the electronic stuff, and I loved building this stuff. So I carried on in university for a bit more after my first degree, and then eventually became a software engineer. But this was really sort of an attempt to sort of get back and start being creative about building some physical things that I could hold in my hands, because as great as software is, you can't really hold a physical thing in your hands, and there's something to be said for that.
And just actually making an actual thing that works is very rewarding.
Tangible thing, yeah.
And also, it was an excuse to buy an oscilloscope, really, as well.
Absolutely.
So, Stephen, apart from Amiga, what other hobbies do you have, like, things?
So, I really love the Archimedes series computers as well. I'm very fond of them, in the same way as I'm fond of the Amigas as well. Pretty much dead heat equal on those two. I never owned Archimedes back in the day. They were too expensive, but we had them in schools. I don't know if you guys had them in schools as well, but
yeah, we did.
When I was growing up, the Archimedes was the machine. It was really, really, you got to play, I think it was Pac-Mania or something on the Archimedes. You got to play that in school when the teacher left the room. It was it was the game that you wanted to play. But the Archimedes I really loved, and I sort of started out my coming back into hardware by getting myself an FPGA development board and redoing the Acorn Archimedes in the FPGA for one of the open source FPGA projects, the Mist board, and kind of think that kind of was the start of things. And then eventually I just really wanted to get back to real hardware, real authentic Amiga chips, rather than doing all the stuff in FPGAs.
So your first foray into FPGAs, you re-implemented an entire machine. That's impressive.
I kind of ported. I think I started by porting the BBC Micro, and then quickly moved on to the Archimedes. I'm not going to say I did it myself. I've got entirely myself with it, even that I did it pretty quickly. But I kind of invented a workflow quickly that let me do that without having to actually have access to the hardware all the time. So I got test benches and I found some good software that helped me do that, and then I was able to snowball it from there.
Brilliant. So what was your first computing experience?
I think my first computing experience would have been a BBC B. BBC, certainly a BBC microcomputer on a trolley.
What year was it? Like 83, 85?
I think it would have been 1980. It would either be 83 or 84. It would have been primary one for me. So around about then. Maybe just before primary one, primary two. I know my younger brother hadn't gone to school at that point, and I remember it was kind of like an open day, and everybody was invited to the gymnasium. You know, the whole village was invited to the school to see this computer.
This wonder.
State of art, no, yeah.
And for an island off the west coast of Scotland, you know, God-fearing community, this thing that cost an absolute fortune, that everybody was scared to go anywhere near in case they broke it, because it was, you know, it was probably about half a year's salary for everybody to replace it if it broke. So I wasn't allowed to touch it, but I watched as other people did things. But I remember in latter years using that machine and having some fun with it, and that was probably my first, very, very, very first.
And how did you get into Commodore then?
So, I mean, I progressed from that. When I was about 7 or 8, my father got me ZX Spectrum, the rubber key thing. And I can't remember what it was, but there was some fault with it, that it didn't load games, or games didn't reliably work. But you could do the basic, you could program in BASIC on it. And so that kind of really got me into if I'm going to use this machine, I'm going to have to do program stuff myself. I think that there was some problem with the tape interface, the loading thing. It didn't load games very well. Or didn't do it reliably. So I kind of just got into programming that way. And then probably about age 13 or 14, I got myself the black sheep of the Amiga community. I was given a 600.
Hmm. Yeah, that was my first as well.
So what aspects of Commodore interested you most? Like games or music maybe, or hardware or software or programming, yeah?
So I think to start with, games, because, you know, yeah, get a machine.
Just like
machine,
for all of us, yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, you're in school, and back in the day, people were handing games out, you know, try this game, try that game. But I also remember getting pretty early on in it, getting handed a DevPack 2 disc, and I'd done some Z80 programming with my Spectrum. I think I'd got a ZX Spectrum 48K rubber key thing, but I'd moved up to the Plus 3 just before I got the Amiga, and I had a Multiphase 3, so I'd had a disk drive, and I remember doing programming in Z80 and thinking it was horrifically complicated. And I remember it was just like once I got to the 68,000, it was like somebody had taken all these horrible constraints away, and I could just code. And I wrote some games, I wrote some utilities, I did some reverse engineering, should we say, of computer games, and I've still got some of my old source code of one or two games I converted, and I wrote some simple platformers that I don't have the source code for anymore, and then that kind of just sort of fizzled out, and I ended up getting a PC when I went to university.
That's how it went for a lot of us, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, the Terrible Fire project itself then, okay, if we're just to talk about that, there seem to be a couple of offerings at the moment. Could you give us an overview of what's available?
Yeah, so, the first thing that you can pick up, and if you just wanted to do something very simple, you could grab the TF-520. I think that's just a straight 68020, and it lets you plug that into a 68,000 socket. And then, more complicated than that, so that was kind of like me understanding how this all worked. It was a really, really simple dipping my toes exercise, but the source code for that thing is entirely out there. You can do what you like. You can take it, you can modify it, you can produce your own versions of it.
And for anyone who might know, that would cover the Amiga 500, the 500 Plus, and the 600, is it? And maybe the 1000?
Not the 600. It would cover the 1000, the 500s, all the 500s, and the 2000 as well. And most of my boards to date have been for that, replaced that big 68,000 64 pin socket. And the reason for that was simple, because those machines were available really cheaply, and I found some in a skip, and there was no penalty. If I blew the thing up, I wasn't going to lose anything from it. So that's why I started with that one. And other machines like the 1200 and 600 for me were more complicated and rarer than the 500. There's so many 500s out there. And then if you want to, so for the next thing in my line, I made it more complicated. I tried, let's add some RAM, let's add a hard disk, add an FPU. So I went for the TF, the 530, which is an O30 processor, 2 megabytes of RAM, an IDE interface, and an FPU wired up at 32-bit. And that's a really, really nice bit of kit. That maxes, gets you maximum performance for a 68030 on an Amiga 500, because there's no waiting for the RAM. It's the RAM I chose is absolutely zero wait state. So I got a lot of stick for choosing that RAM. They said it wasn't enough RAM. Why did you choose this RAM? It's expensive. But the idea was to see, let's just see how fast this thing can go. Let's just, as a sort of theoretical exercise, let's see what performance you could get out of an Amiga 500.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you know, recently I did this. I made this board for the CD32, and really it was an answer to all the people who were whinging at everybody in the community. It was kind of, why doesn't anybody do a CD32 board? I said, well, do you want a 60 on your CD32? No, we just want RAM and an IDE. What? You just want RAM and IDE? I can do that in a weekend. So I did a series of this, and I designed it in a weekend. It's taken me a little bit longer than that to get it through, you know, iron out all the problems, but that's because, well, that's sort of because I had to use the community as beta testers so that they could go through all the permutations that I would never be able to do in a reasonable time frame. So they all had, you know, they had different risers, they had different versions of the CD32, they all had all chose different RAM to solder down on their boards, which meant it was really difficult for me to actually test it. But in the end of the day, I think we recently managed to get everybody's problems sorted out. Everything that everybody wanted was on that board. And I think that's like a minimal viable product for the CD32. And it seems to be going, there seems to be a lot of appetite for it. I was pretty surprised. I thought people would just sort of go, yeah, come on, I want a bit more for my money. But yeah.
No, I think the CD32 has a sort of a special status because it's almost sort of acceptable in the living room as a games console, as opposed to, you know, a computer with loads of extra wires and stuff like that. It makes for a nice WHD load machine that can kind of go under the radar. And I think that's what's catching people now.
Yeah, and I kind of noticed that the machines that I'm targeting, the prices of them go up on eBay pretty quickly since I start targeting them. So that's why I'm sort of changing from machine to machine. But I've got three CD32 boards, and only one of them ever lives in its case. but the one that you see, the one I have here in front of me just now, it's sitting running, and I've been testing some firmwares out on it today, and I think I've managed to finally nail everything that I've got. All of the different, I think there's five different versions of RAM that people have decided, even though I only spec'd one, everybody's just gone, oh well, I can get that one cheaper, I'll try it. Oh, this doesn't work for me. So could you please sort it out? Well, I don't have that. How do I figure that out? So in some senses it's good, because people have tested a wider variety of permutations. But it makes that quite difficult for me. But the actual design of the board only took a weekend. It was, you know, just ironing out all of the little bits and pieces. But I kind of purposefully left it so that I could do that stuff with sort of soft reflashing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant job anyway. Do you have anything else in the works right now?
So I have I've on my channel I've announced the TF 534S, which is like the original 530, but with slightly more RAM. The RAM is Zorro 3 instead of Zorro 2,
so it's means faster.
It's not actually any faster, but it doesn't get in the way of your sidecar slot.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, you can't really use anything more than 2 megabytes and my original card on the sidecar slot, and it won't. It kind of interferes with, if you were to plug the TF530 into the Zorro, into the 2000, it would eat up all your Zorro space, so you wouldn't actually get any Zorro cards appearing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of shunted it out of the way, so that doesn't get in the way of your Zorro 2 cards on the A2000. And simultaneously, it's giving us a SATA port and a little bit more RAM. And the SATA thing is kind of crucial because there's one of the critical things about the Amiga is all of the Amigas, my boards, my CD32 board, my Amiga 500 board, the original Amiga 600, the original Amiga 1200, all of them have unbuffered IDE ports, and that makes compatibility with certain drives pretty difficult. It makes compatibility with cable lengths beyond a certain point a problem, and it's a headache for anybody trying to support these boards. And I've had long email chains with Ian Steadman about this, and my solution was, let's just try SATA, because that just gets rid of that whole problem. Mm-hmm. Because you can just put serial ATA, you can put a CA to CF card, you can stick that wherever you want, and you can relocate it, and that whole sort of problem goes away. It's kind of like abstracting the problem away. So hopefully if that works, that will be a big step forward for the Amiga 500. And then after that board, I've got an 040 board in the works for the A500.
So that's a serious upgrade for a 500.
I think the idea with that is it's really, I'm kind of working towards redesigning and rebuilding an 060 card for the 1200.
Hmm.
SD RAM, SATA port, and 060, a genuine 060. And that's the kind of end game, I think, for me for the Amiga. But I think I want to take small steps to get there. I don't want to just jump in one go. And it gives people other products for other machines as well as I go. Probably the only machine I won't touch is the A600, because it's very well catered for these days.
Yeah, true.
What do you think about, you know, like going into the PPC as well? Like, you know, because you said like end game 060 is just going to be your end game. Have you thought about the PPC machines for the classic Amiga, like 1200?
I have to admit, I was never a fan of the PPC. Mm-hmm. I wasn't one of the people jumping up and down when the PPC was announced on the Amiga as the path. I actually felt that was wrong. I thought they should have gone with ARM. That's my opinion. So I'm not really a fan of the per PC. So maybe someone will take my board and put PPC on it, but I don't really feel like I have enough enthusiasm to really push that and really want that to happen.
Okay, fair enough. So are there any of the meetups or sort of retro computing events that you've gone to, or, you know, a lot of these fairs and stuff that are cropping up now, Amigas and the retro scene in general, are quite popular these days?
You know, I've never been to anything like that at all. I keep threatening to go to Acorn, the Wakefield Acorn Riscos show, and I never managed to go. I'm a father now, so getting time off is quite difficult.
Uh-huh. Indeed.
Well, it's only last year that we sort of kicked off to the Irish thing again. Like, you know, because there was nothing in Ireland for years, but, you know, it's got suddenly very popular again, you know, but these things are cropping up everywhere.
And I could practically swim there from here as well.
Absolutely. Well, sure, come on over in January. We're having our next one, so you'd be more than welcome.
I may do that. Exactly. I may do that. I've actually cleared some time in my schedule for that. I have to see if I can negotiate the time off with my wife.
I've already booked it.
Stephen, excellent. Fingers crossed.
We have a desert island question we sometimes ask. So I want to know what your favorite game, demo, mod, and application are for the Amiga.
Oh, game. Probably Frontier. I could probably play that forever. I could just keep playing that game forever. I could keep myself.
That's my answer too,
For all time. I probably put 1,000 hours into that, at least, if not more. And then probably another 2,000 into Frontier First Encounters on the PC. So what was the second question, sorry?
What's your favorite demo?
I've never been a demo guy kind of guy. I liked looking at some of the I probably couldn't name a demo. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I remember the Spectrum demo. There was a mod I quite liked. It's like echoing. I can't remember what the name of the track is. I have it here on my desktop. Echoing, but it's probably not a popular one. I'll maybe forward it to you guys so you can Absolutely. Hear it. It's on my laptop. It's kind of one I had. You guys would know it to hear, but I can't remember what it's called. It's called Echoing.
And how about an application?
Application's probably... I love Personal Paint. That was fantastic mm-hmm. application.
Yeah, I still use it myself as well. It is handy for doing small stuff.
Is that the Cloanto app?
That's the one, yeah.
I think that's the one that really got them that they broke in. I don't know if this is true, but for me, that was the first time I became aware of them as a software developer.
Mike from Cloanto was at the Amiga Ireland last year. With a bit of luck, he'll be there next time.
But yeah, I kind of think that's the same for me. I think it's the first thing I remember the name actually cropping up, because Amiga Forever wasn't a thing back when that was out.
Right. What do you think of the current hardware developments, you know, like maybe Vampire or other stuff, you know, currently developed?
I think what the Vampire guys are doing, you know, in terms of technical aspect, is amazing. They're really hard, particularly the CPU core stuff, is fantastic. My only issue with it is it feels really like we're going to be reinventing the wheel when these guys go away, if they go away. And inevitably, everybody is always going away. And I expect that eventually I'll go away, but you'll be able to build on my stuff. So that's why I'm pushing the open source thing.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, everybody loses interest at some point, and the other, you know, life takes over. They've got other things they need to do, other commitments. You know, your wife says to you, you have to repaint the bedroom or whatever it is that you have to do. And you have to start taking your kid to rugby classes at the weekend or whatever it is, and you just don't have the time to put into it. And my fear with the Vampire is that is all going to go away when that happens to these guys. But I think what they've done is technically amazing.
Mm. Absolutely, it's impressive hardware as a unit. It is, yeah.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, it's a good point actually. What you're saying, I was looking at an application today that looks very promising. And I spent a good bit of time sussing it out to see if it was what I was looking for, and it was. And then as I got to the end of the thread, I saw that it hasn't been updated in the last year, and there are a few bugs still being reported, but it's not being tweaked. So it's probably, even though it was in development for years, it seems to all be for nothing now, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, and it can really get enthusiasm, and people can get behind it, and that sort of thing can happen. I have no problem with people making money from selling the Vampire stuff. I have no problem with people making money from my stuff, to be perfectly honest. If you take my design, get the boards made, and put the 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever it takes to get it built, into building one of my things and sell it for whatever your time was worth, then I have absolutely no problem with that at all. I think I keep getting messages from people going, do you know people are selling your stuff? And I'm like, I don't mind. That's fine. They've put they've gone off and they've bought the stuff, they've put it together, they've debugged it, and they've sold it to somebody. And as long as that person that they've sold it to goes back to them if there's a problem, then I'm fine with that. If they come back to me, I may have an issue with it. But that's why I put the logo on the boards that I get a cut from in any way, shape, or form, is so that I know that. You know, if I get, I think with the dirty PCB stuff, I get $1 per batch, and with the eBay stuff, I get a small percentage of it as well. That way, if you've got one with that logo on it, I know that I've at least had a little bit of money for it, so you can have a little bit of my support time back.
Mm-hmm. It's a fair way of doing things, I think.
And the stuff I put on GitHub is everything is exactly as is, but my logo is not there.
No, it's a clever solution to that whole situation, which, like you say, can be. Amiga community sometimes has a bit of an oddball attitude in some ways, and I'm sure you can and will get questions and crazy demands from people. But yeah, it's a nice way of dealing with it.
Yeah, well, the idea is I don't want anyone to feel like they've been sold something and been abandoned. But at the same time, you know, if somebody goes out, makes my board and makes a lousy job of soldering it and sells it to 100 people, that's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if I do it, if it's one of the ones I've sold, then absolutely, I will help you out as much as I can. And I'll probably still help you out as much as I can, but I don't really think there should be an 8 level. It's about levels of expectation, I guess.
So Have you used or have you had any experience at all with the NG Amiga stuff like AROS, Morphos, and OS4?
So I spent a little bit of time with AROS. In fact, I really quite liked AROS. And in fact, I think that's how, in my opinion, that's how Amiga should have gone. That's really where it should go in the future. I'm not a fan of OS4. I can't, for me, it kind of doesn't exist, OS4. AROS seems to be something we could build on, but I think it's kind of, I don't know, it feels like frozen in time and nobody will take it forward, or people are afraid to take it forward because they'll get sued or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think in general there's a sort of a, I think there's a lack of developers of that kind of that skill, you know, that, you know, for OS kind of stuff in the community, and I think that can't be helping either.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of developers, but I think they've sort of fade in and out of being able to help. And if you are in that, if that's the case, if that's where we're at, realistically, most of the people who use Amigas are in their 30s and 40s and 50s now. Mm-hmm. And that's the age that you tend to have kids. So if you're going to do that, then make your stuff open source so people can fix it for themselves.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of ego in the Amiga community, I think, in the sense that I think people don't want to give their thing away because they'll lose their ego or the thing that makes, you know, the thing that they're a hero for. But I don't necessarily agree with. I don't think that. I think you get more from it by giving it away and letting people let it develop a life of its own.
Absolutely.
Stephen, what machines do you have currently yourself?
As in what machine?
Ooh. Well, retro machines.
Retro,
you know.
Machines. Oh my god!
go for all day.
I've got. Well, let's just go by stacks, okay? So I've got a stack of A500. there's just a stack of them. I'm not even going to count them. Some of them work, some of them don't. I have a bunch of CD32s. I have some. I've got one A600. I've got a stack of A1200s as well, but only one fully working machine. I have a 4000 and a bunch of 4000 motherboards that don't have a machine to go into. And that's, I think that's my Amigas. And I have a 1000. I have a 1000 that needs repaired. So that's my Amigas. Other machines, I've got some Atari STs, Atari STEs. I've got an Archimedes. Several Archimedes machines, the A3000, A4000, A540, which is like, that's kind of really a kind of a rare machine. So I'm really pleased I kind of got my hands on that. And then I've kind of got my 8-bits, my CPC machines. I've got my Spectrums, and I've got a SNES. I've got, there's a lot. And my wife says I should probably get rid of some of them if I'm not using them.
Yeah, that's a common one.
Yeah, we all can identify with that, I think.
I think the Xbox is a retro machine now, isn't it?
The first one,
counts,
definitely.
It counts, yeah.
Yeah, the first one is definitely.
And I don't think the 360 is that far away from being an Xbox. Oh, being a retro,
just like
machine
PS,
either.
It's just like PS3.
Weirdly.
It's getting there slowly.
Strange, but yeah, it's amazing how the whole retro scene has picked up recently.
You've developed a lot of retro hardware to date, Stephen. What is your personal favourite?
Probably the 530 board. I think that was a big, I think that kind of like a thing I always wanted to do was to wire up an 030 board. And for me, it was, I kept looking at these boards that would go on eBay, these old 500 accelerators, and they would go for ridiculous money, and they didn't look that complicated, and I thought I could probably redo that, and I really wanted to understand the processes involved in doing that. So probably the TF530 is my biggest or happiest moment, I guess.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah, it does seem to be one that generates a lot of interest on the forums and in the community. In regards to the Amiga's popularity in that, and it'll probably never reach the heights of the 90s, but do you think that it can be at all relevant in a mainstream kind of way?
I don't think really mainstream is that important anymore. I don't think mainstream is what people... I don't think there is very much anything mainstream anymore. People are moving away from mainstream because it's too commercialized, it's too controlled. Like Sony's got its a vice grip on that, and Microsoft have a vice grip on that. So I think things like more niche type gaming is coming back in a big way, because there's something more real about it. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but I think the entire gaming scene is fragmenting at the moment, and we're moving to a more, you know, going back to Commodore 64 is becoming more interesting, and there's a lot of interest in emulation, but people are always going to want to get their hands on the real hardware, or they might start an emulation and then move on to the real hardware eventually. So yeah, I hope so. I hope people will do more games for the new games for the Amiga, but for me, like things like taking Quake and running it on the Amiga, I don't see the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're going to do a game on the Amiga like Quake, well, that's not what the Amiga was about. You're having to soup your Amiga up to, you're having to pay more than a PC costs to play it. It's not really that much of a point.
Yeah, that's it.
Doing that, so why not just play Quake on the machine that was meant to play Quake on, and play, Grand Prix F1 Grand Prix on the Amiga, because that's a fantastic game, and I love playing that game, and I've probably sunk another 500 hours into that game as well. But things like that, and what maybe things will come about is more modifying games to allow them network play. That would be fantastic. I'm hoping that sort of thing comes along. What would really be nice is if some of the older game houses were able to do new versions of these things, or rebuild them with these features in them, instead of us having to go in and hack them in.
Yeah, that would be nice. All right.
You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, when you were choosing the RAM for the earlier boards, there was criticism of it. And just today I was talking with somebody who released a video and got some really unnecessary flack for basically a helpful tutorial. It seems the Amiga community can, you know, get quite heated. There are some kind of pockets where this kind of stuff can come from. And I'm wondering, do you have any advice for people who are considering getting involved in development in terms of, you know, handling the community and keeping yourself sane while you're working?
Yeah, I was pretty much unprepared for... I mean, I was kind of prepared for... I thought I would just get random trolls. You know, I thought I'd get the random troll going, ah, you look like, you've got a brown t-shirt on or something, you know, completely undirected. I wasn't prepared for the informed level of trolling that came along from the Amiga community. And particularly things like, everybody's got their own opinion on what's possible and what's not. And there's so much misinformation out there. I think try to be cool, try to understand all of the facts before you respond. And pretty much ignore everybody that, because at the end of the day, if you're going to do some stuff, some videos and stuff, you're doing them. Why are you doing them? You're doing them so they can possibly be useful to somebody, and so that you can probably get some enjoyment out of the process. So just do those things and ignore everybody else, I think, pretty much. I got a lot of flack for doing stuff on the Atari ST, for even daring to show an Atari ST with an Amiga accelerator in it. That was completely unprepared for how much hatred there still is for the Atari ST, even, you know, 25, 30 years ago, 30 years later than...
It's ridiculous. They're just trying to finish off arguments they had when they were a kid 20 years ago, you know? It's bizarre.
I had people... I was on a live stream. I was trying to get it to work. I was like, you know, guys, we've got some small glitches on the Amiga 500, but, you know, on the ST, they're huge. And so let's actually plug it into the machine that gives us reliable failure, because then I can actually do some work on it. And when we get it right, we'll plug it back into the 500 and it'll be brilliant. And that's what I did. But I had people on the live stream going, burn that thing. I hate that thing. You know, it's, whoa, really? Why? Yeah. Unnecessary.
Absolutely. So, and a little bit crazy.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, so that I was unprepared for that initially, but now I realize, you know what? I am doing the stuff I want to do. If I don't want to do this stuff, I'll stop. I'll do something else. I'll go and do another platform, or I'll, you know, take up chess or whatever it is. I just want to do something to unwind. I do put a lot of time into this, and I put a lot of thought, and I don't just make decisions willy-nilly. I kind of talk to people in the community, and whatever decision I make, people criticize it. Some people will criticize it. So I've kind of come to accept that. But I think, you know, I saw something, you know, one of my heroes in the Amiga field at the moment is Chucky the Gang Hurtle. He does a lot. He did Diagram. That was really, really crucial to me doing my work. And he's done a clone. I have it sitting in my desk here of the accelerator for the Amiga
3640. 4000. Yeah,
the 3640. And there was a lot of flack from people going, "Why did you just remake that? Why didn't you put RAM on it?" Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And the guy sat in a hotel room while he was out on way in business, and he traced it from a photo.
it's insane work. Yeah, absolutely.
It's insane work, and he's put a lot of effort into it. And we've got now got a, you know, these things are starting to get expensive and rare, and he's put the effort in. And I don't understand the criticism. The goal of his project was to give us a basis to reproduce these things because they're becoming rare, not produce you somebody who wants an O60 processor with a gig of RAM and a SATA port on it. Well, we'll get there. This is step one.
Absolutely. And there also, it seems, a lot of those accelerators that are sort of succumbing to capacitor death and stuff, so the boards are effectively ruined. So there's quite a lot of, use that can come from just replacing the exact boards.
Yeah, but also John made this open source.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And his Diagram's over open source as well, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, I kind of pressurized him into doing that.
I know he was a bit tentative about it, but yeah, I think it's working out well. And I use it here, and it is incredible stuff.
Yeah, the reason he finally succumbed to actually shipping it was because I had actually decompiled it and started adding my own stuff to it, because I needed to do that. So, but once he saw that I was doing that and I'd added some things for him, I'd take him. I think what it was is I sent him a blob of code saying, "Look, here's some stuff I'd like you to add to Diagram," and he went, "You know what? That doesn't make any sense to me in that resourced form. Could you just, here's the real code, just could you rewrite it?"
Fair enough.
And that's where it all came from. And that's, it was shortly after that it became open source.
That's good.
Your projects are well known for accelerating Amiga and Atari ST computers. Do you develop hardware for other retro systems too?
Not at the moment. So I have a plan to write some stuff for the Archimedes, do some stuff for the Archimedes. I have a machine sitting in my loft that's got 4 megabytes of RAM, and it can be expanded to 16 if you build the card. And there's a guy who sells the cards for 100 quid each. And I don't feel like spending 300 quid to add 12 megabytes of RAM to something. So I'll do a board.
Very good. I know you mentioned that you had developed some games in the past, but have you any interest in developing applications currently or games, or is it just on the hardware side? And I know there's like the firmware involved side of that, but is that your main interest?
So I'm a software developer by trade.
Hmm.
I spend my day writing software, and in recent times I've spent I've been managing software teams as well. And software's been my life for the last 15 years. The idea was to get away from doing software.
That's fair enough. Absolutely.
I'm home from work. So I want to do something that isn't software. And this is about as close as it can get to software without actually being software, right?
Absolutely. Now, to be fair, in my old job, I was doing firmware development. And when I'd come home, I still wanted to develop software, but I'd write everything in BASIC rather than write in C, just because it was a break from messing about with C and horrible pointers, and it's obviously far more limited, but you know, that's what I still use now on the Amiga just because of that, because it was different from the day job.
I think in my last two jobs I've used so many languages that it doesn't really make a difference.
It's just
whether
it's just software. Fair enough.
I still do stuff on the Amiga. I'd still happily write code and I'd still do that, but I don't really feel like writing and supporting something, if you see what I mean. And and then taking bug reports and reproducing the bug and fixing the
Absolutely.
Bug and going through all that. That's too much like work.
And so, especially on the Amiga, where you could have like 1,000 different combinations of patches and all sorts, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's tough.
I like to code for Linux, and if I'm really pushed, Windows. But that's it.
Fair enough.
Going back to the K1208, could you tell us a bit about that in connection with the Amiga 1200?
So this is the Kipper 1208 board that's derived from the CD32 board.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think Brian Kipper 2K, I think he wanted to redesign my CD32 board, and I think I kind of got a little bit touchy about that, and I'm kind of not sure why I got touchy about that. I think it's probably a personal ego thing, a feeling on my part. But I gave him the source code for it very early on, and he ripped it up and redesigned it. And I was like, but I haven't even released it yet. Why did you do that? So I suggested that he do the 1200, take the CD32 board and just, you know, same wiring, but put it onto the 1200 and see how far we go.
So did you actually have any involvement with that, or was it just here's the stuff, off you go?
So this is a schematic from my board, but it's not my...
You weren't involved in the rerouting it or anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's actually kind of... That's how I want the open source stuff to be. What I want what happened with the open source is, so if someone takes the design and does something new or adds some new value to it, what I really don't want is people rebadging it or fixing a bug. If they find one, that's fine. But I'm sort of a bit touchy about them just ripping it up and putting... Oh, I thought it should have been done like this before anybody's even tried it. I think it was before anybody'd even tried it.
Yeah,
upset me because it was like, come on, at least I want to actually know if all this work is actually. Let's see if we can validate that, because that's been a lot of work, put a lot of sweat and thinking into this. Happy for you all to have it, but please, the payback I want is, the payback I want is for a bunch of people to build it and give me some feedback.
Say thank you, and that's it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if they don't say thank you, even if it says it doesn't work.
No, absolutely.
At least then I've learned something from it.
Is K1208 going to be open source as well? Do you have any idea?
It needs to be open source because it's derived from the GPL.
Oh, I see. Yeah, good.
And that's the viral bit that comes in with the GPL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, that's good.
And that's the only point at which I'll start throwing lawyers at anybody is if they start
claiming it as their own closed thing. Yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah, if you take my board and you make a version for you personally, don't care, right? If you do something, change it, make it for a thing, copy for you, don't care. If you sell it, then you need to give out the source code for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the rule.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us anything about your future plans, if they are not, you know, like a secret or anything?
Well, I've got some other hobbies on the go at the moment that are going to eat a bit of my time over the next 6 to 9 months. I have a private pilot's license and it needs to be renewed next month or I lose it. So I'm away to America to renew that, and then I'm going to do some more flying in Arizona right after Amiga Ireland. I actually moved flying to be right after Amiga Ireland in January. So that's going to need to, and that involves lots of tests and time, exams and things. So that may eat some of my time over the next 6 to 9 months. But I really wanted to. The thing that the reason I started, I guess, started this whole thing was I bought a Blizzard 1260 card.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it cost me the best part of £600. And I thought, maybe even more than that, actually, probably kidding myself that it was £650. And it was, I actually in my head thinking it's £600. But, and I thought, holy crap, this isn't actually that complicated. The board isn't that complicated. The firmware isn't that complicated. And we should be able to produce these in the Amiga community ourselves. And we could probably even produce a better version than this nowadays.
Yeah.
And probably cheaper and blah, blah, blah. And the reason that this is expensive is because it's rare.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. Limited quantity. That's the thing.
Correct. And what I wanted to do is, and I think this is some of the reason why there's been some stick and been a bit upsetness coming in my direction is, if I start producing these, the value of those goes down.
So there's people who've spent 600, 700 quid on one and now it's only worth 400.
But I still think that, maybe they won't be, but they'll still be collector's pieces because they're original.
Absolutely.
And you know, they're not the knockoff Stephen Leary versions of it. You know,
I'll gladly buy your version. Yeah. Oh, trust me.
Yeah.
I'll be the first one.
You know, but so that's the end game. I think the end game for me is probably a version for the an 060. I don't really see any point in putting an 060 on an Amiga 500, to be honest. An 040 would be enough. I think 040 is comedy on an Amiga 500, yeah, to be honest. But I'm going to do it for just so I can learn some things about the bus protocol. And then I'm going to go up to try and do a TF-1260, probably with a blob of SD RAM or something like that, that I can run in burst mode so I can get some really fast performance out of it and see how we go, and probably slap a SATA port on it. And as that's kind of why I ended up doing this most recent board for the Amiga 500, was because I dropped a SATA chip on one of my boards, the new ones I'm designing, and thought, I can't realistically just try and bring all of these components up together at the same time. I don't know how to do SATA. Why don't I put that on a board I've already got and see that had some value to that board and solve some problems over there, and then I can prove I can do a SATA. So that's where I'm going. I'm going there in small steps, like learning how to do SATA, I've done SDRAM before on other boards, but yeah, bringing SDRAM in and making it work with 68000 series chips. Learning a bit more about what we can do with the... I'm learning quite a lot about what I can achieve from the PCB manufacturers, what they can do and what they can't do. There's been some painful lessons on that, but none that I haven't been able to work around. But I think the idea is, I basically said to myself, if I have a board design, I'll ship it and get it, and I'll start trying to make it work. I'm not going to sit on a board design and send out 3D models of it and go, look, everybody, how cool is this? Because that's just teasing everybody, and you know,
absolutely.
I think it's unfair, and also, I don't care about 3D models. If you can show me a 3D model, you can afford to spend $15-$20 to get it made and try and make it work. And then, if you do that fast cycle with dirty PCBs or with one of the other cheap PCB prototyping manufacturers, sure, it might not work. You might have thrown $20 down the drain. But what's more realistic is that you'll have to put 20 patch wires on it to make it work, and then you'll get those mistakes out in the next version, and you'll move on.
And the thing is, the capabilities of these, even like you say, dirty PCBs and stuff, their capabilities are, they pretty much match as the best of the time. So you know, you can easily match what the timings and stuff that you need, and the track widths and everything that you need for an A1200 type technology.
Yeah, the CD32 board I made is really, really tight spaced. It's 6mm spacing, and some of the board houses aren't able to do that. So
yeah,
just need to be careful.
But like that. even 10 years ago, that was not an option for, you know, doing a run of 10.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, I could I've done PCB etching here in the house, and I've thrown all that stuff out because it's just too cheap to do that now. But I could just about do 8mm track spacing back in the day. I would maybe run four traces next to each other, 8mm spacing for a small bit of the board, with some really, really slow etching and some really, really a lot of care. But now you can do 4-5mm etching. So that what I mean by 4-5mm etching is that's the 4/1000ths of an inch space between tracks, or the track itself is 4/1000ths of an inch wide, and that's really as the track gets smaller and smaller, they tend to vanish in the acid. So you can lose a board pretty easily. And I've heard some stories of some of my boards being made, not any of the batches I've had, but some other people have had them made by other houses, and they've been slightly marginal on them. But nowadays, if you can do that on a four-layer board at the prices that you can get them from China, it doesn't make sense to try and do it yourself anymore.
Absolutely. So, Stephen, our last question for you. What's, over all the years, what's your favourite memory from Commodore Amiga?
Favorite memory from Commodore or Amiga? I loved opening the A600 HD Epic Pack I got when I think it was 15, and I opened it up and the smell that came off it was amazing. I loved the Epic game, and I loved the Amiga 600. I have to say, I still do. I think it's a fantastic machine. It was It was probably a stupid move commercially for Commodore, but for me at the moment, it was, at that moment in time, it was fantastic. It was surface mount technology, which means it was, should have been a cheaper manufacturing process. So I think they messed up. I think the actual manufacturing process at Commodore was messed up. It wasn't anything to do with the machine itself. And I think for me, that was a really, you know, that was a one of those journeys of discovery where you get something new and you can, all of those shackles that were holding you back in the 8-bit world fell away and you could just follow your imagination.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to put it. And that's a lovely place to finish, I think. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. And I'm going to hold you to coming over in January and having a few drinks with us.
I don't know about the drinks because I'm supposed to be on a plane. I think I'm going to be on a plane to Arizona the morning after Amiga Ireland. So probably don't have too many drinks.
Fair enough. The rough going. Brilliant. Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much.
No, you're very welcome. And it was a pleasure talking to you guys. It was a pleasure talking
and
to you.
And you
very much. It's been a pleasure. Likewise. Talking to you as well.
Pleasure. So that's it from us for today. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.